All right. Well, it's really good to have Marion back. She's been gone for a month.
Well, hello, everyone. It's great to be back
On
on our
planet Earth.
meditation to self-realization.
Station. So you did this 1 month journey. I'm going to call it a journey.
It was a journey,
To India.
or we could call it a wild ride in a tuk-tuk.
By the way, she's still on India time. I went to wake her up because today she was napping about 2:30, which was 2:30 in the morning in India. And the way she woke up and everything was so funny. She, what are we doing now? I said, you're not in India.
Yeah, when I go to sleep, I go to distant places.
So let me ask you something, honey. You, even before you went, what was it, the anticipation that was building up?
Well, it was more of a mixed bag because I had trepidation with all the unknowns that were coming before me. And on the other hand, I felt so certain and so ready. So it would go back and forth. I would notice the tail scales tipping one way, and then pretty soon it's coming back and it's the other way, where my anticipation and my readiness and I, am I is the has the day arrived yet? Just like a child.
Oh yes.
Have we got there? Are we there
Well, and but I
yet?
remember the struggles you went through, just all the paperwork and documentation you had to do, passport and vax and all that stuff, just to get there. And
Oh, I didn't get vaxxed.
not vax, but I mean
Testing.
the testing and then that first outfit you went through to get your visa.
Oh, right.
There was a lot of discouragement going on there, wasn't there? Or
Well, you know, I think I had some, I think I had definitely disappointment and some fear that, oh no. How's this gonna work now? And I also knew that I was being divinely guided to go take this journey because I had never, ever wanted to go to India before. I was so sure that India was not a place that I would ever want to go to. I didn't, you know. The amount of people,
Right.
the air quality, the poverty, it just felt like it would be totally overwhelming. And so when I did fill out my application to attend Tapas, which, by the way, Tapas, I learned once I got there that Tapas means penance. No.
Oh, wow. This is starting to sound like Catholicism.
Well, it blew me out of the water when I heard that, although I did know that there were going to be austere practices. And so I was ready because I knew that within myself, it was hard to continue to go on knowing the types of resentments that would come up, even with you, you know,
I'm
my
sure.
beloved,
I still got some lumps on my head.
you're gonna make me responsible for those. And then interactions that the connection just didn't seem to be there.
With people?
With myself, with you, with people, with family. And so I was ready to do a cleanup or a, I was ready to stop suffering is what boils down to. And I know even after attending tapas, I still suffer. I'll let everyone know that I missed my flight from Seattle back home to Bozeman on Friday night.
It was so funny.
And when the attendant, I came to the desk and the attendant said, "We just closed the doors." And I said, "You mean you can't open them?" And she said, "No." I just laid my head down on the counter and immediately felt the disappointment. And then I recognized my suffering. I saw it. I recognized it. And all of a sudden, I was laughing.
Yeah, and then you called me up. And immediately, I broke out in laughter. We said, "I missed my flight." I'm like, "Oh, I couldn't." I mean, right into laughter.
He did. He did. He didn't just have any disappointment at all. He went right straight to laughter.
Because it was just after all, because it's a long trip. Let's backtrack a little. So now at one point you surrendered with the going through the visa and the paperwork because you had to do it a couple times and get the picture just right and all that stuff. And you just surrendered. Well, if I go, I go. If I don't, I don't. But now you're on the plane with a group of other.
Well, there were three of us from Seattle.
Yeah. Okay. And
then we met.
Well, you went immigrant to Seattle.
Right. And three of us met in Seattle and went from Seattle to Dubai. And there we met with, I'm guessing, up to 10 to 15 more tapa bees.
Tapa bees.
And there, and it actually didn't feel like a hard flight for me. I was so excited and my adrenaline was up. And even though it was a long flight, it was just wonderful because I had on the long 13-hour flight from Seattle to Dubai, I had an aisle seat right next to in the middle of the big
jumbo jet,
in the middle, right next to the restrooms. And not everyone would like that position, but I did because I didn't have to climb over anybody while they were sleeping. Because I knew I wasn't going to be sleeping, so I could get out, I could stand up, I could stretch, I could, and with the restroom being there was a little extra room. And so I was so grateful to have such a perfect position. Even now, I'm grateful to the universal intelligence that made it work for me.
All right, then you got to Chennai, isn't that where you landed? I think it's the fifth largest city in India, southern India.
Yeah.
And what was it like to go just from the airport to the motel?
It was, I don't know, I think it was 2 o'clock in the morning and so it was dark.
Okay.
What was surprising was how many people were still awake
At
that time. Out on the street, in their vehicles, in their tuk-tuks. There's a lot of people, so I'm guessing some people worked at night or partied hardy or whatever they were doing, but there were a lot of people out. And so I did get a flavor for India right away, and I don't believe I had any culture shock. We had been watching the series of Nanak.
Oh, yeah, we had.
And so we'd been going to India via the video.
Just for our listeners, Nanak is the guru of oneness of the North. He came out of the Himalayas and that region, a Sikh. And he traveled all over India back in his day. And actually, there's a golden temple that was built. I can't remember if it was built in honor of him or by him or whatever. But I look at him as being the oneness guru of the North, and Krishnaji and Prithviji, the guru, oneness gurus of the South.
Well, I believe that's true. And, or however.
Or their parents.
Ekam. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ekam temple. The temple that, the powerhouse, I'm going to call it. It is mm-hmm. a temple and it's a powerhouse built with on no grid lines and with the golden ratio. It's very... it's a very powerful temple, and it's referred to as the worldwide center for oneness consciousness.
Oneness consciousness.
So because a lot of international people mm-hmm. are always coming.
Well, now you get to the hotel.
To the palace. To Leela Palace is where I stayed for the first 3 days.
And you got pampered, didn't you?
It was very, very, very lush for India. I was not expecting this. It was, it was a palace. So
overlooking the ocean. You sent me that one picture of breakfast looking over at the...
I think it might have been either a bay or a channel mm-hmm. to the ocean. But it was beautiful. And then one day we did go out and visit some temples. We went to some temples.
Oh, that's neat.
A group of us. I sent you a picture of. Anyway, we did go visit some temples. And we even took... Well, we didn't take part in a wedding, but we came through one of the temples while a wedding was taking place. And I guess it was very close to the end because then a photographer said that the bride and the groom wanted a picture with all of us. So
no kidding.
So we posed in a picture with a lot of their Indian family and
wedding crashers.
Yeah, it was
nice.
It felt a little bit like being in Yellowstone National Park and having Asians ask to get your picture taken with you. But actually, I had other people ask, can they show me their camera and ask if they could take a picture with me?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so.
So now you get pampered and fed and massaged and
oh yes, I did. I had a wonderful time massage.
And then you're on your way to
Ekam
in your dormitory.
Right.
So when you were with the group you were with over there at the motel,
by the time we came to Chennai, there was the group had grown.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't bus to Ekam, actually, we taxied.
Mm-hmm.
There were, I believe, four of us per taxi, three in the back and one in the front. So
what'd you share with each other? Your experience just getting there, or why you're there, what you're looking to...
Not so much. I mean, it was 2:00 in the morning. Most of us were pretty sleepless for the 13-hour, for that whole night. And we were just in our own spaces.
But I mean, after you were heading towards Ekam, you had a picture of a grouper and you sent it to me. So we're getting ready to leave the hotel. And there was, I don't know, a dozen of you.
That was when we were leaving to go to the temples.
Yeah. Oh, to the temples. Oh,
it wasn't Ekam. It was to the temples. The local Chennai temples.
Oh, no, that's neat.
Yeah, because by the time we were leaving, you were sleeping.
Yeah.
And I was trying to get in touch with you, but you were sleeping. So, then we took a bus from Chennai to Ekam to our campus. There were four different campuses, and they were all very nice. There were definitely campuses built for international students, because people that had been to the campuses 16 years ago said that things had changed drastically and had been much improved upon. And we really did get pampered. I mean, our laundry was done every day. Our meals were prepared. Our sheets were changed every day. And yeah, we had smiling Indian women that
took care of you.
Took care of us.
And then she comes home, and guess who's the cook 24/7? No, I'm just kidding. So, you know, you've experienced a lot of doing a lot of inner work and workshops and different processes.
Right, over the years.
Over the years. So,
some with you and some before you.
And probably putting the cart before the horse, but your overall experience, how do you compare it to all of that inner work? Do you think this was supersedes any of that, or was it a good preparation?
I'm very, very grateful to have had the preparation. I could, and I have years of life experience, which I don't necessarily recommend that, because you may as well go through life in a more enlightened state. I would have wished to have had this opportunity much younger, so that I was a more enlightened parent and a more enlightened wife, a more enlightened. And
you shared a story the other night with our daughter Chris and her friend about the family that was there, and the mother, you want to share that?
It was a young Indian couple, and they were there with their 16-month-old son. And we all got to see him, because the caregiver would stroll him around or be walking with him. And so the mother one day shared. So basically we were doing 21 days of silence, which they called Mona, to remain in Mona. So the only time we were speaking, for those that really did practice it and take on that sadhana, was when we would share in our group situations. We had sometimes broken into, there were 600 of us that had attended the tapas, and so we'd break down into small groups, and then sometimes we'd share in the big group of 600. And this mother shared in the big group that she found herself, since some of the processes and her self-realizations, she realized that she was already conditioning her son at 16 months, because people were always waving hi, and she would say, "Come on, say hi," because he knew how to say hi and wave. But she said he didn't always do it. Sometimes he very gladly did it, and other times he would be looking off in a different direction. And she said, "Now I realize that I was conditioning him for social interaction. And he may have very well been experiencing a cool breeze on his cheeks. Or maybe he was observing a bird and totally fascinated with watching a bird. And here I am interrupting his delightful experience, whatever it may have been, And I'm trying to get him to do what I want him to do, what is acceptable in society at 16 months. And so that brought quite a bit of awareness to all of us.
As parents, as
even adults that were conditioned at a very, very early age. When you think about, when you really spend time and go inward and think about when the first moments of conditioning you remember, the unpleasant situations, and I certainly had a lot of those come up. So I see myself being conditioned at, no, I'm sure possibly younger than two, but definitely by two.
So I find that fascinating, because even though, you know, we've been doing these meditations and work and whatnot, I find myself, even though I feel like I have this more freedom and liberation of my mind, I still come up against old conditions, conditioning, you know, whatever that condition might be.
And that's exactly what we looked at. And now with an awareness of how that affects our state of being, our state of mind, and generally leads to suffering, because we're oftentimes trying to get approval or competing with one another, and or just basically stressed out because I have to do a better job so I get the raise or I get the promotion. And it's such a violent way of living.
So
now that we have a flashlight and we can see that, oh yeah, I'm suffering because I recognize that I am trying to live up to someone else's standard. I'm stressed out for reasons that are illusions. I mean, if you are divinely connected, if one is divinely connected, then the abundance flows effortlessly. That's what I wanted to share, is how when I filled out the application for Tapas and was accepted, and then it was a matter of coming up with the funds to be able to attend Tapas.
I remember that. I was shaking at the knees.
I prayed to the divine, and I also did the Eka mantra, which is Hamsa, which means I am in the divine. So hum, the divine is in me, Ekam, we are one. And that's a very powerful mantra. And I did it 1,008 times a day to manifest the funds, to bring forth the funds, trusting that the divine would hear my desire to go and desire to have the funds. And it happened. We didn't even have to go in our savings account.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was, we didn't really stress about it.
No, we just watched it happen.
It just happened. We weren't even anticipating anything. It's just, but it, once you set that intention that you wanted to go,
and started the ball rolling by starting to apply for the application first off, doing my mantras. And then I think within 2 weeks, the income was coming in, and I continued those mantras.
That's amazing.
Out of gratitude.
Yep.
So I don't I don't believe we need to share all the details on it. But
no, we don't need to tell anybody that I had to give up my season tickets to the Chicago Bear games. I'm just kidding. We live in Montana.
Anyway. Not true.
Not true. But so, it is. It was amazing just once you set the intention.
Yeah, so to witness that level of connection and the benefit of holding an intention, a pure intention, and to see the miraculous unfolding of events that can happen in one's life without having to stress, without having to compete, without having to use up all your funds and have fear that you're going to live without.
Well, you know, I think another thing too is that gratitude attitude, just the gratitude of you having the opportunity to go before the funds even showed up. And because it seems like a lot of times people pray or wish or hope, you know, for abundance. And you don't have to do that. You just have to be grateful for what you have and
set an intention.
Set an intention and then just get out of the way.
That's the point. And I do want to extend my gratitude to the Dasas that are monks that work and have dedicated their life for the raising of the consciousness of humanity by working on with this oneness organization or
movement
oneness movement. Thank you. It's more than an organization by far, and thank them because they nurture us all along the way. Once you tap into them, you know, into the movement, you get unlimited nurturing and so I knew what to do because I was told if you want to have the funds to go, just trust and do some mantras. And it wasn't hard to do that.
So let's start getting to some nuts and bolts of the whole thing. Okay. The inner work, so to speak.
All right.
And, you know, this is a good start, you know, when people are trying to figure out how the heck am I going to be able to do this, you know. Did you have any feelings of being stuck in ego or negative thoughts?
While
you were there going through your inner stuff?
Yeah. Oh, I was wallowing in it.
Well, how'd you work through that?
Well, we were constantly reminded to see the suffering and to recognize the cause of the suffering. And so the first liberation was being liberated from the ego. And oh, that was such a big awakening to see how the ego wants to run the show, how the ego wants to be bigger and better and wants more and more. And the more you give it, the stronger it gets. Mm. So that was a huge awareness. And so it was easy to see that a lot of suffering came from the ego. And it's not like I'm free, that I don't have an ego anymore. What I have now is the awareness of what kind of antics and tricks that the ego and it certainly camouflages things all the time. Sometimes I'm able to catch it quickly, and other times I'm, oh my, look at this. I've been here a while. Okay. I see the suffering and the beauty of having been doing it with 600 people and doing it from sunrise pretty much to sunset. Sometimes we get in early. It became a body experience so that when you were suffering, you knew you were suffering. Your feet weren't hurting your being was hurting. The whole being, once that awareness sets in, you can feel that suffering and it can't hide anymore, even little sufferings.
Did you feel it?
Like stubbing your toe, which some people might think is a big suffering, but or realizing you're coming down with a cough, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You realize that then, oh my gosh, I've got a cough coming. Oh my gosh. And then you have your ego's projecting, or your mind is projecting all these futuristic
thoughts,
negative thoughts about what you're going to be going through because you're getting a cough, and what might it be? And and then you recognize, oh, so that's what's causing all the suffering. Okay. And then it's gone. As soon as you recognize what's causing it, it dissipates.
Hmm.
Poof.
So how did the Dasas, did they assist you in any of these kind of reflections? Or?
Oh, yeah. When we broke into smaller groups at least once, or often, not every single day, because sometimes we hiked in the forest and we had beautiful experiences all along the way. But we often met with Dasas in smaller groups, and then we were able to ask questions and share. And they were powerful, because to hear someone else's realization a lot of times started your self-realization. Oh yeah, that's something that I go through too, or that I can relate to, or it takes off in a different tangent and just leads you to another self-realization.
Mm-hmm. So, I could half imagine there must have been quite a bit of suffering, because you're there for, what was it, how many days? 40 or
28.
Something? 28 days. And all of a sudden the diet's changed. And you mentioned that it was like a detox diet.
A healthy, yeah, diet. Mm-hmm. Where?
So how, your diet was pretty similar probably to what you ate over there.
Yeah, I have to say it wasn't a big adjustment.
Not a big event for you, but for others that are heavy on cheese and meat and drinking and stuff like that, did you see any of those people really suffering?
Oh, well, in the
physically versus mentally, or I guess it's interconnected, what you just described.
Well, what people shared later is there were quite a few people that would share, I wanted out so bad. I was going to leave. I was going to say, this is not for me. I am gone. Hmm. And I personally don't know if they went and spoke to a Dasa or, you know, how they resolved it, but they were sharing how then some self-realizations hit and they could see what they were doing here. Then they could really appreciate how the body was cooperating with the austerity of the program. And yet it was exquisite. I mean, every little thing was thought about, thought out, and planned for us. And we had fun, and we danced, and we, even though we weren't talking, we were getting to know each other through the shares and through experience. It was experiential oneness that we felt with one another. And I'd like to share at this point in time how different it was with all 600 of us the first week versus the fourth week. It was as different as night and day. And for myself personally, the first week I noticed all sorts of judgments coming up about people. Just, you know, nothing big, but I was noticing them. And oh yeah, there's the ego wanted, it's knowing she's doing better and she's smarter, or, you know, whatever the judgment happened to be around. And then every single one of those people, I had a beautiful encounter with that just totally melted away the judgment and really made me see how we judge a book by its cover.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about this person, and I'm saying that they're a wild dancer and you're going to hurt me if you don't be careful, and just all sorts of silly things. And then they turn out to be the kindest, most loving people that assist me in the many ways that I appreciate having been assisted. I never stood on the bus one time. I was always either able to get a seat or was given a seat on the buses, which I was eternally grateful for, because the bus rides were sometimes a very wild ride in India on very narrow roads and bumpy and
made my driving look great, huh?
Oh, I'll never be fearful in the car with you again. I'm quite certain. I better not say never, but I'll recognize.
You know, so we do the meditation group in the morning, and we've shared that previously in other shows. And one morning, I think it was Jim, he says, "Well, today they're going into tapas, 24-hour tapas." And I had no clue what that was. And so you shared a little bit. You started sharing a little bit tonight with me. But do you think we have some time to explain that a little bit? Or we can take a break? And
well,
you went out in the forest or something?
We went to the Nirvana Forest, which was a very beautiful forest in India. I believe they're banyan trees. I don't know. I think they told us the trees, but they were pretty special. There was a very, very sacred, it's a very sacred forest where sages, for ancient sages and philosophers and mystics, hiked these hills and through this forest. And there's a written documents or documented stories of the different sages that walked this forest. And so it vibrated. I mean, nature does take us there. And so we would spend some time with Krishnaji, who is now Krishnaji and Preetaji are now my gurus. I didn't consider them my gurus before I went, but I do consider them my gurus now. I've been given so very much.
All right, so talk about gurus, because a lot of people have misconceptions. We just talked about perception.
Okay, so I would say I considered them my teacher to see my inner guru, to they shed the light for me to be able to be aware of the light within myself. And they provide the wisdom that makes the difference for me to see what I need to see in order to evolve.
Yeah. And, you know, even if you were tuning in to the last couple shows, and if you haven't, it's all archived. But a lot of our shows are readings from Krishnaji and Preetaji's Four Sacred Secrets. We do a lot of their teachings that are, you can find on YouTube, and the meditations and processes. And, it's really nice.
That's
because
what we didn't do. We didn't do a meditation.
Yeah, at the beginning. Oh, just that little one that we do all the time. We could do a meditation when we get done here for the last few minutes. Yeah. Anyway, as I was saying, it's just they kind of cut to the chase, you know, they do it 3-4 minutes and all of a sudden you're right into looking at yourself. Okay, now how does that relate to me? Oh yeah, I see it.
Right, because they're enlightened sages, they have the consciousness that impacts our consciousness. So the lights go on. And you know, there's been enlightened sages all through time. And Preetaji and Krishnaji's main mission is to bring forth a more enlightened humanity where more enlightened beings will be walking this planet and solving the problems, the many problems that we have, without making more problems. They'll be divine solutions that will resolve the issues that are going on. And so it really does take a certain amount. I believe their goal is for 80,000 to live a more enlightened, in more enlightened states of being, in order to have a phase transition to uplift and bring humanity's consciousness up.
So, you know, enlightened is kind of a mystic term. Some people will call it awareness, like for instance, Eckhart Tolle. I call him Eckhart Tolle now.
Well, I will make this a distinction.
Make a distinction there. Is it the present state or suffering?
Enlightenment is not a, it's a journey. It's not a state that you arrive at. It's experiences, it's living with a consciousness and a care for all people, for all life, for the planet. It's stepping outside of just the me consciousness and going to a oneness consciousness, because we are a web. There is a web and we are all part of it, and we all impact one another. So any little bit of suffering that we do contributes to the whole of suffering.
And we did that interview with Elfie, the one with the wolf, and that's, she talked about the web. So that's, you can find that in the archives. That was a pretty sweet interview. So trying to achieve an enlightened state always puts you into this future of going towards like a goal or something, and you miss the present moment.
That's
and
right.
That present moment might be.
The present moment is really where we're living.
Mm-hmm.
If it's good to look at that, because we tend to go to the past. We live in the past with worries and concerns, or concerns of what we said and, oh, I didn't do that right. Or we're planning ahead in the future and allowing very little time to be in the present, which is where life is actually happening right here now. And so it's a beautiful place to be. And when we slow ourselves down and smell the soap and feel the texture of it moving between our hands when we're washing our hands, and really get ourselves present to the bumblebee buzzing in front of your face, or the ant crawling across your feet.
And it can even be once you do this pause or slowing everything down, it could even be that, oh, now you can recognize I'm in a suffering state.
Right. Well, if you're...
Or I'm in a beautiful state.
Right.
But that present moment is whatever is going on at that time, is what you're saying. And it could be connected with nature. It could be connected with making dinner. It could be connected with, you know...
Everything we...
Judgment.
Do during the day.
Yeah. So
it's important to be able to recognize how much we do instead of how much being time we get. We're human beings, and yet we become human doers.
Yeah, we were discussing this the other day, how the human is the form, is the form of our body. That's the human. And then we have the being, the human being. We're in this form, but then there's this being.
That's here to be.
That's a good way to put it. The humming bee. But it is. It's so, you know, I like to think of it as the soul. You know, my soul took on this embodiment. My body, my mind, my soul said, well, I need to balance some karma or learn something or finish something or whatever it needs to do. Or, well, I think I'll check out this form. And then this form is gone and the soul, the being, continues on.
And so Krishnaji gave a bit of information, and I took it as wisdom because it really did, it was an eye opener. He talked about knowing that we are Homo sapiens, and breaking that terminology down is a Latin term that actually means wise beings. And then he asked us, so do you see us all as being wise beings? And you know, let's reflect on that a little bit. How wise are we in our day-to-day journey here on Earth? Yeah. It's definitely something to ponder and to strive for.
Well, was there anything revealed to you?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I could certainly
nuts
see
nuts and bolts.
I could certainly see how I have spent a lot of my life in self-obsession and in my ego state. The ego is just in full charge, or my mind took over, or in craving, or being very dualistic. This is right and this is wrong. This is the right way to do it. This is the wrong way to do it. This is spiritual and that's materialistic, you know, just all that kind of dualistic thinking and acting. So, yeah.
That's interesting that you put it that way, because this morning when I was picking knapweed at our property, and then I get to the neighbor's property, and for whatever reason, it didn't affect me. Like in the past, I would say, oh, what good is it for me to pick the knapweed off of ours when it's all over theirs and they're not doing nothing about it? And today I just looked at it and said, there's a patch of knapweed. You know, and it's great for the bees, lousy for the cows and the ranchers, but I didn't have any of those kind of judgments going through, you know, my
that
head.
That's a celebration.
Just, yeah, it really is. Well, you just brought this up. So it was all of a sudden, I just realized, wow, I just looked at it today. I didn't dwell on it. I didn't have any energy going towards it. I just looked at it and said,
you even saw the beauty in it.
I did, all the beautiful purple flowers
and the bees, food for the bees.
Yeah, I didn't see too many bees, but I bet you they were there. because there was a lot more there than on our property. So, but anyway, that is, it's, yeah. But you see, even saying that, what I just said now, all of a sudden I took this pause and I stopped in mid-sentence. I realized that property, you know. And I realized how easy that thought form, it's so subtle, that thought form all of a sudden is comparing.
Theirs and mine. Mine.
You know.
Yeah. And so then you see how we divide, how our division, how it's so subtle, how we separate ourselves out from one another instead of being inclusive and one, realizing that we really are all one. What I do affects you, what you do affects me. We have an impact. We have a major impact on one another. And I hadn't realized the impact for most of my life. I'm grateful to know now the impact and be able to make wiser choices and more wise action, right actions. And so I'm celebrating. It was life changing for sure. And I'm grateful that I've been able to share with our listeners on our weekly show.
Yeah, so I think it might be nice
to the opportunity.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Share.
Well, thank you for sharing, because a lot of this is new news to me too. I couldn't wait to hear some of the experiences, and I know there's a lot of our friends and people and relatives that would like to hear about it too.
And I do want to mention that I was initiated to give city blessings, which is a spiritual blessing to have an enlightened experience. And I've been initiated to do that for 28 days. And I am hoping to set some up in Bozeman. So you might check out the library for flyer, or
are you going to put one up there?
Well, if I get one set up there, I would. Yes.
Do you feel like giving your phone number out?
I can.
Mean, most people don't give phone numbers out over the air, but some people do that are passionate about their.
I'm okay with this. So, if you would like a city blessing, I will be giving them through August 20th, and I may do some traveling, so it would be good to get in touch with me sooner rather than later. So Marion Koslick, area code 406-223-3901. 223-3901.
It might be nice to have at least a small group gathering.
Right, yes. Mm-hmm.
Get some friends and other people that are like-minded and not. But this might be a nice interlude now, honey, to close up the show. We'll put on a nice meditation.
Okay.
And some meditation music. And
thank you all very much for being here with us.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Thank you for sharing. Oh, yes. So may the long-time sun shine upon you, all love surround you, and the pure light within you guide your way on, guide your way on, guide your way on. All right. We'll take the meditation to the end here. Probably be about a 5-minute meditation. God bless. May you all have a wonderful, beautiful state of mind.